What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 33 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your weekly source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I am your host, Luke Lewis, joined by the queen of Animal Crossing herself, Claire Helmberger.
Hello, everybody. I am here. I kind of feel like not calling myself the queen of anything anymore, though, after what's been going on the past couple weeks on The Bachelor. Thoughts?
Oh, because of that annoying
crazy
woman
person?
Victoria, yeah. Who calls herself the queen.
Yeah.
The, well, what do you want to be? The,
can I be the,
you pick.
Can I be the,
the Animal Crossing aficionado.
What's the word for the dowager? I want to be the dowager countess of Animal Crossing.
The dowager countess of, yeah. Animal Crossing. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, like Maggie Smith's character on Downton Abbey.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So let's do the intro again. And my co-host, the Dowager Countess of Animal Crossing herself, Claire Helmberger.
No, I don't like that either, because Dowager Countess means my husband died.
Well,
I'll just be the Countess. Then you can still be alive.
And the third time's the charm. My co-host, the Countess of Animal Crossing herself, Claire Helmberger. If we had a, like, stream box with sound effects, I could go, oh, the crowd.
We can do that too.
Whoa. Yeah, this is great. Audio listeners are... We only have audio listeners, but I'm sure they're all really enjoying this. All right. Well, how you been? You're on a week vacation starting now. So do you feel free?
I feel the vacation vibes for sure.
No students, all rests and
yes.
Hangouts and
yes.
Video games and
yes.
The film and the movies.
The film and the movies and
the
video
the TV
games.
Shows. The video
all
games.
All of it.
We
and
love
the food.
Video games here. At
there's going to be
Lukewarm
eating.
Games.
There's going to be sleeping. There's probably going to be some Zillow scrolling. I'm ready.
Wow.
I know.
That's a pastime of yours. I don't know if you talked about it on the podcast proper, how you like to look at real estate just for fun.
I don't know. I just like houses.
Well, you get design ideas and, you know, you get inspired.
Yeah, I wanted to be a real estate agent before I wanted to be a musician.
Interesting. I didn't know that, actually.
I've had a lot of random aspirations. Remember how I wanted to be a marine biologist when I was a kid, but then I found that I was a
there
fan
was
of water?
There was one point where I wanted to be an FBI agent, a lawyer... Or a stand-up comedian.
Or all three.
Yeah, I think they were separate phases, but yeah, all three would have been interesting.
I feel like you could have at least been an FBI agent who moonlights as a stand-up comedian. Those at least two
or
could
like,
have an overlap.
You could be a lawyer and then become an FBI agent. Like, I feel like there's some overlap
yeah,
there.
Yeah, there could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But here we are. Content creation by day.
Sleeping by night.
Sleeping by night. And doing many other side gigs and lots of other things.
Indeed.
And teaching children sometimes. But not currently.
Indeed. Very true.
Well, now that we've gotten a rundown of randomness, we are here to talk about some different topics this week. So full disclosure, we were going to talk about the indie games that we've been playing, but with all of this Last of Us casting news this week, we really thought we have, as big Last of Us fans, we have a lot to talk about with this. So this will... be the we've got the news and the main topic of the show kind of segmented into different things. So why don't we get into we've got the news, our weekly news segment where we discuss what's going on in the games industry. And this week we got some very exciting casting news
yeah.
with the news of Joel and Ellie, their casting. So I'm going to read a quick synopsis from Variety. This comes to us by Joe Otterson. Nice name. The upcoming Last of Us series adaption at HBO has cast Pedro Pascal as Joel and Bella Ramsey in the role of Ellie, Variety has confirmed. Pascal has seen great success as the star of Disney Plus' The Mandalorian. He also recently appeared alongside Gal Gadot and Christian Wiig as the villainous Maxwell Lord in Wonder Woman 1984. Ramsey is best known for her role as Lyanna Mormont in the HBO series Game of Thrones. The character Ellie is a 14-year-old orphan who has never known anything but a ravaged planet in the show. She struggles to balance her instinct for anger and defiance with her need for connection and belonging, as well as the newfound reality that she may be the key to saving the world. The Last of Us series was first announced as being in development at the Premier Cable Network back in March, with the show landing a formal series order in November. Based on the video game of the same name, the series takes place 20 years after modern civilization has been destroyed. Joel, a hardened survivor, is hired to smuggle Ellie out of an oppressive quarantine zone. What starts as a small job becomes a brutal, heartbreaking journey as they both must traverse the U.S. and depend on each other for survival. Chernobyl creator Craig Mazin is attached to write and executive produce the series along with Druckmann. So, a lot to unpack there. We've been excited about the show for a while, especially since Neil Druckmann, the writer of the game,
is heavily
involved in the project.
Always a good sign.
But what do you make of these castings with Bella Ramsey and Pedro Pascal? What do you think?
I'm really excited. Right off the bat? I'm really excited. I think that you know, we had both picked, at least for Ellie, we'd both kind of picked somebody who we thought really would look and sound the part and could do a really good job. And that wasn't Bella Ramsey, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited.
It was kind of a surprise.
Yeah.
On both fronts.
But I'm really excited to see how they both, how like the costume and makeup artists are able to transform their looks into the faces of two characters who we, you know, it's not like a book adaptation where everyone has their own idea in their mind's eye of what the characters look like. We know what these characters look like, and we want the depictions to be faithful. And I'm also really excited just to see what these actors can do with those roles.
Definitely. I think I was along the same lines, very optimistic and excited for both of the castings. I was surprised at Bella Ramsey just because I had envisioned, we were both talking about Caitlin Dever,
mm-hmm.
who was in Booksmart and Unbelievable, and she also voiced Cassie in Uncharted 4. We thought she was like a sure fit as Ellie, and I still stand by that, but in terms of it being a long-term show that they're going to assume film across multiple years, it does make sense to get a younger actress, and I think Bella Ramsey crushed it in Game of Thrones, albeit a very different role, so I'm excited to see what she brings to this more center stage role, as she was kind of more of a supporting character in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think this role also requires more nuance. So yeah. I don't think she is, I think that she will rise to the occasion. We just haven't seen that from the character she played on Game of Thrones quite as much. But I also loved her character on Game of Thrones. So I am excited to see.
It's one of those things, though, that like just based on the like capabilities of the showrunners, you know, the writer from Chernobyl, a acclaimed HBO series, and Neil Druckmann, if they cast Bella Ramsey, they must have seen something in her audition that was like, yep, there it is, there's Ellie. So that makes me really excited.
Yeah, I'm just excited for us all to see that on the big screen, I guess, small screen, but...
And then Pedro Pascal, I was incredibly excited about this one because such a big name, and I think such a recent big name. Like, he's an established actor, but, like, coming right off the heels of Mandalorian, super cool. And since they're going to the Boba Fett show next year, there's kind of a hiatus of Mandalorian for a while, so I think that's how he has time to do it. But I wasn't totally sold until I saw a side-by-side picture of his face next to Bella Ramsey, and I was like, no, I could see it. He has that kind of grizzled, weathered look that Joel has, you know, obviously, like, the facial hair and things, and, like, I can totally see it. But yeah, it's a really big role for him, and it was really exciting to see. What did you think of Pedro, specifically?
Well,
the casting?
I was intrigued and surprised when he was announced. I think the funniest thing to me is that both of these actors were on Game of Thrones and had pretty substantial roles. Because remember,
who was Pedro Pascal in Game of Thrones?
He was the guy from Dorne, remember? Who got his eyes crushed in, who we were really hoping was going to help.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, that's interesting. So he does have some ties to HBO.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that.
I only knew that because when I found out he was the Mandalorian, I was
that
like,
was your connection.
It's the, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Mandalorian has kind of been my main touchstone to him, and then seeing him in Wonder Woman, which we both really didn't enjoy Wonder Woman.
1984.
I thought it was pretty bad. But I will say, Pedro Pascal did make that character, Maxwell Lord, fun. Like, he was the absurd, over-the-top, cartoonish comic book villain that I think was written. And, like, he did deliver a good performance based on the wacky script he was handed.
Yeah.
So I definitely think he's, like, a capable actor. And I'm excited to see him in this, like, once again... Because, like, he's really good in The Mandalorian, but you never see his face, except for, like, very few moments here and there, you know what I mean? So it's, like, but the way he's able to, like, emote with his body and with his voice, I think is very impressive. And so if he has full range of motion and facial expression and everything, I'm excited to see what he does with Joel.
Yeah, me too.
Nice. So let's get into our title track, which is still focusing on HBO's The Last of Us, but I want to specifically talk about our expectations of the show. going into it. When we focus on the plot, it's been confirmed that the first season of this show will follow the first game in mm-hmm. the series. So it will take place with Joel smuggling Ellie out of the quarantine zone. I'm curious, in terms of your expectations, what do you want from the story of this show? Do you want it to be very beat for beat what the game was, or do you want it to try some new things within this established plot framework? What do you think?
That's a really interesting question, because so much of the narrative of the game was built into the gameplay that it's going to be really interesting to see how they adapt some of those story elements into mm-hmm. the film, the
especially
TV
like
genre.
The environmental things
exactly.
of like note reading and like reading signs on the wall or like finding items that were left by previous people
right.
and things like that. Yeah,
I wonder if they're going to be like flashbacks so that we can see visually what happened in the, you know, in the sewers and all these different areas.
Oh,
where,
and like
yeah.
cut to other groups of people and things along the journey. That could be
or
interesting.
Or if they're gonna leave out those other, you know, sub stories that we got hints of through like note reading and stuff, like you said. Or maybe they'll just stick to the main plot and the main characters, but maybe add more, like, I don't know, intimate backstory to the characters. I just hope that they,
yeah.
that they, I think that what the TV exploration of the story offers is a potential for, more, like, some different kinds of nuance
yeah.
than what we saw in the game. Because the game had its own sense of nuance to the different stories. I think that the TV show should incorporate some of that, but in its own way, and not try to shoehorn everything from the game into a different genre of storytelling.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think there's like a really strong base with The Last of Us, the
yeah.
game, but I don't want it to be beat for beat, because if I wanted that, I'd go play the very cinematic game.
Right.
Like, I want it to explore new angles of the characters, and it makes me think of a tweet that I saw last night after this announcement, or I'm sorry, Wednesday night after this announcement broke, where Troy Baker, the voice of Joel, tweeted that he was so excited to see what Pedro would bring to the role and what he would learn about Joel
mm-hmm.
by watching Pedro's performance. And I was like, that's really striking, because I think that's what fans of the game want, that are optimistic about this show, because we can get into it more, but video game adaptions of movies and TV shows have never really had a great track record. So
right.
I'm trepidatious about this, as it's like my favorite gaming franchise, The Last of Us, but I want it to be good, because I do think there is mainstream appeal with the story being told.
Right.
But yeah, I think I totally agree with you of it can use the story, but also develop like interesting moments within
yeah.
it.
I almost wonder if they're going to incorporate story elements from, like, Left Behind, or, like, show more of Joel and Tommy's past than what
yeah.
we saw in the game. That was more hinted at
It'll
verbally.
Be interesting to see in terms of pacing what
right.
they do. I would have to imagine it starts the way the game starts, with Joel trying to escape with Sarah and Tommy, and then Sarah getting killed. Like,
right.
That just is such a striking opening, and it's one of the most striking openings in games that I think that itself would translate so well into the show.
Yeah.
But I almost wonder if they'll play with expectations and do something different. We don't really know a lot about Joel and Tommy's past, other than the fact that, you know, there's the iconic moment in Last of Us 1 where Ellie and Joel are driving into Pittsburgh, and they're ambushed, and the guy... Or Ellie's like, aren't you going to stop for the guy that says he needs help? And Joel's like, he's not even hurt. And then later Ellie asks how he knew that. And he's like, I've been on both sides
right.
of it before. So there was definitely like a marauder chapter of Joel's life that we haven't seen that would be interesting if we saw that in the show.
Right. I think that would be interesting. Have they confirmed how many episodes are going to be in the season?
I don't think they've said, but you have to imagine it's kind of the HBO
standard
of like the 8 to 10
yeah.
range. Yeah, and going off of that, I'm curious like what the pacing of the show will be, because the game is, you know, like 15 to 20 hours if you think
right.
about the game. So there's going to have to, obviously, like the gameplay sequences
take longer than
like a story
watching.
Sequence would be
yeah.
and how we were talking about environmental storytelling, I could see them having moments where like Ellie finds a note and reads a note, or like to have those moments with the environmental storytelling, and they can like pan the camera over a wall in the sewer that has a message on it, and that can be like subtly integrated potentially. You have to imagine that all of the like character moments and people they meet along their journey will be included.
Right.
Because that's, you know, makes, I think, for good television.
Yeah.
Having supporting casts of characters and things.
I almost wonder if what they're going to do is stick more to the story as we know it from the first game in season one, if that's their plan, and maybe add a little bit of new material or like embellished material for the fans of the game who are watching right. the show, but then kind of use the first season to hook on anybody who didn't play the game, and then in season two they're going to explore some, and furthering seasons going to explore some narrative that we haven't seen in the game before that's new yeah. for everybody.
No, that's a really good point. And that segues into my next question, which is, do you think the show will resonate with TV viewers who have no knowledge of the game?
I think it really has potential too, because it's such a narrative game in the first place.
And it's so cinematic. Like, yeah. it is very focused on the writing and focused on the performances.
I think where video game movies run into trouble is there are often games where the narrative, at least the like baseline narrative, is a through line connecting sequences of interesting gameplay.
Yeah.
And I think that the narrative is such at the center of The Last of Us that it won't be too challenging for them to, you know, the narrative itself is interesting. The game is very cinematic. You could play the game if you're not a gamer. It's, yeah. it's going to be hard because you don't know how to really not play a video game. But like, I think it has, it would have a universal yeah. appeal as of TV show, I do think.
For sure. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I also think that the it would be really exciting to have this be just an amazing product, because there are people in my life and extended family that don't care about playing video games, and that's just not their thing. But I think they would really appreciate the story. So if this hits on the same emotional levels that the game did, and I can recommend like relatives and friends go check out this to experience that story that I love so much, yeah. that would be really awesome.
I'm going to make another connection to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, please.
Which is that before the TV show became popular, well, started and then became popular more and more as it went on, people didn't really, like, mass citizen, like, it was a cultural phenomenon when Game of Thrones was on TV.
Yeah.
Before then, people didn't really celebrate fantasy stories. It was seen as more of like a niche, geeky kind of thing to be really into fantasy. And then all of a sudden, you saw the masses all getting really into that genre.
For a lot of people, yeah.
And I think that we've already seen really good, a lot of success for zombie-related TV shows in the past.
The Walking Dead, right. and things like that, especially breaking through the mainstream.
Exactly. So I don't think it's going to, it's not like they have to convince the masses that zombie is a cool genre, because we've been there.
That's
I think.
True, but I almost wonder if initially people have zombie fatigue just after so many seasons of The Walking Dead, so many movies and things. Like, I remember I felt that going into The Last of Us. Like, I was like, oh, a zombie game? Like, yeah. I love Uncharted, but hasn't that been done before? And then experiencing it, it's like, oh my god, no, this story is really doing really interesting things and developing characters in such a unique way in games, and I think it would hold up in the television form too. Yeah. So
I really think that that's why they have to lean into the narrative itself, and especially in their marketing materials. Like, we don't need to see that many scenes when they're trying to promote it of, you know, them fighting the bloaters or whatever. We
right.
want to see what the story is, because I think a lot of zombie fatigue comes from all the stories tend to be about escaping the horde.
Yeah, like the outbreak starts, get to a safe place, violence ensues, dark comedy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, The Last of Us isn't really, it's about the characters way more than
and
the virus itself.
It's so in the aftermath.
Yeah, because it takes place like 20 years after it's begun.
Right. So the world building is also very fascinating.
Which is such a cool way to do it. I was thinking about, you know, narrative devices and how this story just really throws you into it, as opposed of making you get a ton of setup. Like, it gives you setup of how the outbreak started and what happened that caused Joel to be the way that he is, but you don't get to see, like, every single moment leading up in those 20 years, you know what I mean?
Exactly. It actually reminds me a lot of this really fantastic book called Zone 1 by Colson Whitehead, which is also exploring the kind of aftermath of a zombie apocalypse where it's set after, you know, the initial shock of it has died down. Those who are infected, and for the most part, people aren't getting infected anymore if you're, like, within the safety of the safe zone.
Yeah.
And it's about, like, clearing out the aftermath, cleaning up, getting places ready for human inhabitation, if that's the word, once again, and then, like, kind of the breakdown of that as well as the story goes on, without spoilers. And I read the book before I started playing the game. And so
nice, and so you saw that connection. Yeah.
And so I was like, this is so fascinating how it explores the, like, psychological effect of... Because at the end of the day, the zombie genre is a very psychological genre. Like, yeah. Why, like, zombies as a fear that we have, it's so deeply, like, rooted in our culture and, like, cultural fears, cultural trauma. And exploring what we are as a society are afraid of within the genre itself,
yeah.
as Zone 1 did and as the Last of Us games do, is, I mean, there's so much potential there,
mm-hmm.
that I think can get lost in the action. I that's why I think that these materials shine and why I hope the show will also shine.
Yeah, and that makes me think of, like, Cormac McCarthy's The Road, too, and how similar to The Last of Us, it's such a character study, and Neil Druckmann has talked about how that was, like, direct inspiration. Though, I haven't read the book, I've only seen the movie, but that doesn't have zombies, that's based around the idea that a nuclear fallout happened, and years down the road, a father and son are traveling, you know, similar to Joel and Ellie, so...
Right.
Different setup, but the literary devices and things that are at play in The Last of Us are really cool and show how this medium is capable of so much in an interesting way.
Right, for sure. Just exploring themes of isolation and community.
Yeah.
And what it means to be in a society.
And while we're... To kind of finish out the plot discussion of the show, I want to talk about... Do you think season 2 will cover the events of the second game? And then, as a follow-up question to that, do you think we will see... television material in this show that isn't included in the games, if that makes sense? Like, will we see, like, events of Ellie post Last of Us Part 2? Will we see other characters in this world? Like, what do you think will happen? Will it be a 2-season run? Will it be a 1-season run? What do you think?
If they are going to go for more than one season, what I really hope they do, like I was saying earlier, is season 1 show a little bit of maybe some content we haven't seen before as fans of the game, but mostly stick to the story to get everybody on the same page. Then season 2, we start seeing completely new content, and I hope it continues somewhat linearly through the aftermath of the first game, and then maybe like season 5 or 6, if they get that far, is the events of the second game, and then beyond is beyond.
Oh, so you want a lot of new material.
I think that it would be really interesting to explore the stories, add new characters, and like, okay, so once again, if we look at Game of Thrones, that show is such a slow burn, like, in terms of what actually happens. Yeah, characters die all the time, but if you were to boil down the events of the series to, like, what actually happens,
yeah,
with like the plot and the politics and the changing of the houses and stuff, like, it doesn't move very quickly, and they dwell for so long on the characters and the individual people. I think if they are doing that similar sort of thing with this show, that they could do all this stuff in between the events of the first and the second game that's totally new for viewers. And I think that's what they should do, because a lot of their viewer base is going to be people who've played the games before.
This is true. However, I think most of their viewer base is going to be new people. I would argue a majority of the base is... Just because, how many HBO subscribers are there? You know what I mean? How many people tuned in to watch Game of Thrones? How many people tuned in to watch The Undoing, True Detective, all these shows?
That's true.
If it pops up on your HBO Max as the new premiere show, I think it's going to get a lot of people who aren't familiar with the games. And I also think that the fact that the head writer, Craig Mazin, I think is his name, is most regarded for his miniseries, Chernobyl.
Right.
I think it is going to be a 2-season miniseries.
Interesting.
Let's say 8 episodes each season, and I think the first season, which we've already been told that the first season will follow the events of the first game. That has been confirmed. So that then I think the second season will follow the events of the second game, and then I think it's done. I don't think it'll keep going. I think there will be new storylines within it. I think you might see the perspective of other characters in it, without spoiling specifics of Last of Us Part 2, but that game does play a lot with perspectives, and I think we'll see even more of that in a TV show, because you don't have to have the story make like gameplay sense.
Right, that's
so true. You can show others' perspectives within it and see different angles of the story and see new things, so that it is compelling for players of the game, but it also is a compelling story for people who are new to the world.
Yeah.
So that's my thought. I like your idea, though, that there'll be new material, but I just don't think it'll be like entire seasons of new material. And I also don't see this show being
very long.
A Game of Thrones length show. I see 3 seasons max, you know what I mean? Or if they were going to stretch it, maybe 4 seasons max if they took their time with it. But I tend to think miniseries. I also think, like, Neil Druckmann, as invested as in this project as he is, he's a game developer, first and foremost. You know what I mean? He has other projects on the works at Naughty Dog. And I don't think he's going to take the time it would require to have this be like a crazy long production and take that time away from the studio. I don't know. That's just my little inside industry thought, but I don't know. Okay. It could go either way.
I could see that too. I think that if they want it to be more than just a miniseries with like a prescribed run from the start where they know exactly how long it's going to be, but they want to just have it be an ongoing thing that lasts as long as it lasts until the plug gets pulled. I think if it's a miniseries, it'll be like you said. I think if they're trying to go for a longer show, they're going to have to introduce some new content.
Right. No, I hear that. I guess I just think I would argue that, or well, I guess I hope that they have a story they want to tell, and that's the story they're going to tell. It's not like a, you know how some sitcoms can go like, okay, we're going to do the first season, and then if people like it, we'll come up with the second season, and we'll just keep going, going until people get tired of the story. I hope they don't do that, and I have a feeling they won't, because I feel like HBO, generally speaking, tells the story they want to tell, and then they stop. I think of like our favorite show, The Newsroom,
ended
with
on
Aaron
its own terms.
Sorkin. It ended after 3 seasons, and I'm sure it could have gone another one. I think the ratings and critical reception were quite favorable, but they stopped after season 3. And I think this show, similar to the game, if you think about it, there was statements made by Druckmann that they didn't want to make a second game. Or, you know what I mean? They weren't going to make a second game unless they had a story to tell, which was the specific statement. And I think that's like the show. They won't continue making the show unless they have something to tell. I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah.
I also wonder if, because TV shows have, like, they're bringing in, obviously, so many new collaborators on the show who weren't involved with the making of the game. I wonder if there are other people who also have stories that they want to tell that haven't been told yet. And maybe those will get built into. Like, maybe we get a 3-season run, and the middle season is totally new, but then season 3 is the events of the second game, or season 2 is the events of the second game, and season 3 is totally new. Like, maybe there's an additional story someone wants to tell.
Yeah. To clarify, when you say something totally new, do you mean, like, full new cast of characters, or do you just mean like new plot points within the existing world and story
that we have? One okay. Yeah, the second one. I mean that, like, we obviously know,
like, for example, maybe we see more of Bill's story in the first game, or more with Sam and Henry, like more of an arc there, or like,
or we get to see what happens in the, or maybe what they do is, so throughout the second game, interspersed without spoilers, they go back to events that happened in between the two games. Maybe they'll blow that out more and do it in a more linear fashion instead of a jumping back and forth the way the second game does.
I could see it maybe going 3 seasons, because I feel like the first game is a concise 10-episode run. But I feel like the second game you
has
could,
a lot of
especially
other
if you played around with a lot of different perspectives of different characters, you could, there are multiple points where it feels like the game ends, but it keeps going, you know what I mean? That could be different seasons and things like that. So,
well, without spoilers, the halfway point in the second game, so to speak,
could easily with the
major
break.
Transition that everyone who's played the game alone I'm talking about, that could be a really interesting cliffhanger for the end of season two. And then
this
season
is true.
Three is
this
like
is true.
I don't know. I feel like we'll just have to see what they do with it. But I'm excited, and I feel like we'll have a better idea of what seasons beyond season one are going to look like once we see where they go with the first season.
Once we see like a trailer, you know what I mean? Once we see like, what does this show even look like visually? Like, how are they pacing it? And once we see even the first episode, I think we'll have a better idea too.
Right.
This would be a fun one to do like episode by episode, like breakdowns each week on the podcast of like keeping people updated about our theories and things as we go. We'll definitely do that. But yeah, so now that we've covered kind of our plot expectations, let's talk about some of the casting.
Yeah.
So we have our Joel, we have our Ellie, but The Last of Us has an incredible cast of supporting characters, and I thought it'd be fun to run through some of our ideas for who we would, you know, dream casting, love to see play some of these supporting roles. So I went through and made a list of several prominent supporting role characters in The Last of Us series, and you were going to make your own too, but then you looked at mine and you're like, no, I really like all of those. You were just enjoying my casting list. So let's talk through some of these, and you know, we can talk about how likely some of these are, but I'm quite proud of this list, let's put it that way. So my first one was kicking it off with Marlene, who is a very prominent character in the first game. You really only see her at the beginning and the end, but if you also read the Last of Us American Dreams comic, you get to see some backstory of she's known Ellie the longest. She was a friend of Ellie's mother. She runs the Fireflies. Just a really cool character, really badass. So my dream casting for her would be Zoe Kravitz, who is in the upcoming Batman movie as Catwoman. She was in Big Little Lies. She's been in a number of things.
High Fidelity.
That's some of her recent stuff. And she's done other works too, but she's just a great actress, yeah. I think. And she is, based on her work with Batman, like, she's totally down to do like stunt and action work, but also is just a really like great actress who's able to channel such emotional depth that we saw in like Big Little Lies and things like that. So I think she would be super cool as Marlene.
Yeah, thoughts? I think so too. Awesome casting.
And let us know in the comments for this episode what some of your ideal castings would be, listeners. Next up for Tess, I picked Charlize Theron because I think she's just the epitome of like hardened female action movie badass. And that's kind of what I feel Tess is, albeit a short-lived character, I think. Charlize Theron probably wouldn't get cast just to be Tess, just because it's such a small role. You know what I mean? It just wouldn't make a ton of sense. But whatever. We're having fun. You know what I mean?
This is true.
My next one, which this one actually makes a ton of sense, because there was the rumor the morning that Pedro Pascal was announced that actually Mahershala Ali had been offered the part. And I'm a big fan of his work. I think he was fantastic in Moonlight. We didn't see Green Book, but that was another one that he was pretty renowned for recently. He was really great in True Detective Season 3. Just a really great actor. But I think he would be awesome as Henry in the game. The older brother character. I know a lot of people were disappointed when he wasn't cast as Joel. I think he would have been really great, but I am really excited to see what Pedro brings to the role of Joel. But I think Mahershala would be a really great addition to this cast. And with his ties to HBO being on True Detective Season 3, I think it would make sense for him to be involved in this project in some way. So Henry was my choice for that one. Thoughts?
I think that he'd be awesome, of course, because he's an awesome actor.
Yeah.
I think they'd have to young him down a little bit with some movie
magic.
He
is on the older side. We might need... I could also see, like, Michael B. Jordan would also be really cool as Henry.
That's true.
Once again, I'm reaching for the stars here with big names. But Pedro Pascal is a big name. You know what I mean?
That's true.
These are...
The person who comes to my mind for Henry is Donald Glover.
Ooh. Also a big, big name, too. No, he'd be awesome. Honestly, he would be the best, I think.
I think he just... if I'm remembering correctly, and it has been a while since I've played the game.
Yeah,
but
the
first one.
Yeah.
Right. I think that he, of the actors we've mentioned, looks the most like Henry.
I can see it.
Is the closest in age.
Okay. Yeah. I could see it. That also leads really well into my casting for Sam. I picked Caleb McLaughlin. He was... Lucas, thank you. I was getting him and Dustin mixed up name-wise. It's been a while since we watched Stranger Things.
It has been. But I forget those kids' name all the time.
He's a great young actor, and I think he and Bella Ramsey would play really well off of each other.
Yeah, that's true.
And like we were saying, I think like Henry and Sam, they could be more prominent characters in the show than they were in the game.
Right.
Just the way pacing works out, or they could be one episode, but I could kind of see them playing with that relationship of the four of them traveling together.
I think the show could also elaborate a little bit more on the social commentary that existed when the two groups of older and younger travelers came across each other and interacted. When Joel and Ellie met Henry and Sam, there was a lot of the dynamic there was really interesting, and I think they could elaborate on that more, which would in turn involve them being on more episodes of the season.
Do you mean the dynamic of like how Henry was like really protective over Sam, or which dynamic are you talking about?
Well, I'm thinking specifically about how they left Joel and Ellie.
Because it was
every person for themselves, like you would have done the same thing if you had to choose between your kid and these strangers, who do you pick?
Well, and it's also interesting to see the comparison too, because like Sam and Henry are related by blood,
right?
Ellie and Joel are not, but like they still have that same kindred connection for each other. That's really interesting, and it's that comparison is interesting too, like you were saying with the
and their relationships with each other,
right?
The way that they kind of mirror each other, but also don't. The relationships that Joel and Ellie have mirror the relationship that Sam and Henry have, where they like don't really talk that much about what's going on. And the older person remembers life before, but the younger person doesn't because they weren't alive yet. Or
definitely,
Do
you want to read some of the next couple?
Sure. So you had picked out Kurt Russell as Bill.
I think this is chef's kiss. I think he has that crazy old man energy, so much so I can see him with the beard and the full head of hair. You know what I mean?
Right. I would also throw out Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges would be good. I feel like we need like a little dark comedic vibe, and I get more of that from Kurt Russell.
I don't know. I'm just thinking of like True Grit.
Yeah. No, I can definitely see it. I like both. Okay. Very good. What's next?
You had also picked out Diego Luna as Tommy.
I thought this would be a fun one because I want someone that would play well off of Pedro Pascal, and I think they would be really great together.
Yeah.
As kind of the brother, like the feuding brothers if you will.
They'd have to age him up a little bit, but...
Really?
I think so.
I think it's easier to age up a guy that's like in his 30s, you know what I mean? You throw a gray streak in his hair, you make him grow the full beard, and you make him look kind of weathered. Yeah. I think he'd look the part. I don't know.
I don't think that technology has been there for a while. Just look at Edward Scissorhands.
I also don't think Tommy and Joel are about like in their like 40, I would say, you know, like late 30s, 40 probably.
Yeah, early 50s, don't you think?
Probably.
Because it was 20 years after his tweenage daughter died.
He's probably 40. Well, maybe he's like 50.
I think he's like 50.
That would make sense, I guess. Yeah, I'm going to say we'll roll with that. I'll look it up after the show. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Like 50, 51, 49, somewhere around there.
And then next up we have
Rosamund Pike as Maria,
who was in Gone Girl. She's a fantastic actress too, and I picked her because Maria is like this like hardened badass, but also very protective over her family, and I think Rosamund Pike would be really good in the role. I know you're not as familiar with her, but
yeah, I mean,
you
I
haven't seen Gone Girl,
yeah,
but
don't really
which
know
would be
the
worth
actress.
The watching, but yeah, I think she has the chops. And then this is my personal, probably one of my favorite ones that I came up with next, but for David, I picked Sebastian Stan, and I know he's busy with Falcon and the Winter Soldier and probably wouldn't do this one, but he's got that, like, crazy vibe. I'm thinking about his role in I, Tonya. You know what I mean? He's just, like, he can become unhinged, I think. And he definitely looks the part of, like, this crazy dude could live in the forest.
In the vein of crazy unhinged, cannibal. This is going to be a deep cut for pretty much... I don't know if any of our listeners will get this, but his character on Once Upon a Time was also quite unhinged.
Nice.
And he did a really good job in that role.
I also wanted to give a shout out on this one to Andy Cortez from Kind of Funny, who threw out Sam Rockwell.
I also think
that. As David, which I also think that would be really good. I would probably
throw that out too.
I'm just thinking about his role in Billboards
Outside, yeah.
And just like... visceral, or like right. even like his role in Iron Man 2.
Wasn't he also in The Revenant, or am I thinking of the other guy? No, that's Tom Hardy. I get them confused.
Yeah, go figure. Tom Hardy could.
He could do it too.
He's too like burly though. That's David true. Needs to be like.
He's just kind of a little skinnier, scrawny
cannibal guy. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't physique wise. That's what I envision from the character. He needs to be a little sickly. Looking, you know, I
wouldn't
I mean?
Say not... Sebastian Stan is sickly looking.
Yeah, but he could look it for the role. It's like Christian Bale doesn't always look like a coke addict, but in The Fighter he sure does. Like yeah. he
I don't know.
Trained for the role, you know what I mean?
I do struggle with that a little bit, actors losing a lot of weight. And
I'm not saying he needs to do anything unhealthy. I think they could do it with makeup for the most part. But they both are rather muscular, so that would be...
I mean, he could just look a little more muscular than he does in the game. I think that's fine.
That's fine, yeah.
I think that's a really good choice, though.
Okay.
You want to talk about the next
the
one?
The one that I am most proud of, because I think I crushed it, if we got to part two storyline, Erica Christensen as Abby. And for listeners who aren't familiar with her, she was in the NBC show Parenthood, which I was a big fan of, and then she was also in this random romantic... thriller called Swim Fan, where she plays this like crazy obsessive woman who's trying to steal this girl's boyfriend, and it's like kind of Fatal Attraction-esque. She's a very good actress though, and she really looks like Abby. I showed you a picture of her before, and like in terms of like her face and her body, she looks like Abby. And if she, you know, got yacked for this role, I think she would totally look like Abby, and it would be really badass, and she would be great. So, her as Abby. And then next, for Owen in The Last of Us Part 2, I had Chris Evans. I'm keeping the MCU actors going, but I think he would be great. But at the end of the day, you can kind of get different, like, muscular white dudes to play. You know what I mean?
Dudes.
Yeah, like, I just like Chris Evans, and I think he would be interesting. I think he would also have good chemistry with Erica Christensen, who I cast as Abby. So
that's true.
Then next I have Steven Yeun as Jesse, who's really great in The Walking Dead and also in Minari, which is the new kind of indie darling that's coming out later this month. He's a really great actor. I think he would be really fun.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be awesome. And then the last two you had picked out, which I think are really, really strong. You had said that Zendaya would be a really good Dina.
I love her as an actress, and I think she's been on, like, the up and up after appearing in the Spider-Man movies, and then she did Euphoria on HBO. That might conflict with this, so that might be an issue scheduling-wise, but I think she'd be really great. I'm wondering if there's too much of an age gap between her and Bella Ramsey, though, because Zendaya is, like, 20...
She's a bit older.
22, somewhere around there, and then... Bella Ramsey, I think, is like 17. Yeah. So
I really love her and everything that she's in. For me, though, I think that something that really resonated with me in the second game was when she talked about her Jewish heritage. Mm-hmm. And so I think having a Jewish actress
could
potentially be a good way to go for that specific part of the story.
I think I just was thinking about her energy. Like, I think
I think that
a young female actress.
Yeah, I think that she could definitely bring some really good energy and personality to the character, for sure. And then this is my favorite of the ones that you picked, I think. You had said Michael Peña for Manny.
My man. I love Michael Peña from the Ant-Man movies. He's so funny, and I think he has Manny's, like, funny, charismatic, but also kind of a lovable dork, you know what I mean? But, like, but could kind of be a ladies' man character. I don't know. I think he would be really fun.
I think so, too.
Comic relief,
yeah,
if
for
you
sure.
will, and lighthearted moments and things.
Yeah, I think that was...
Yeah, and we didn't cast every single person. You had one more,
I had one
you?
More to okay. add, because you didn't... You picked everybody from, like, that group of people in the second game, except for Mel.
Oh, I forgot about Mel.
And
you're
so
right.
I was thinking that...
I guess technically
this is,
we didn't pick Nora also, but she's kind of a smaller
that's true.
Role, but...
But I was just thinking
Tessa
of Mel
Thompson
because we also
Nora.
Talked about... Okay, well, there
Sorry,
you have it. We did it. Tessa Thompson for Nora. We also talked about, like, Owen and Manny, so I figured might as well talk about Mel because she's, you know,
kind of totally.
In that same group. And so... And I picked this person based mostly on, like, looks and less on vibe.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't seen her and... a lot of things just in like small cameos usually on shows and she's more of a comedic actress but Kate Micucci I think I'm practicing pronouncing her last name right
what
most
is
known
she known
for
from?
The group Garfunkel and Oates which I think they had their own TV show on Comedy Central a couple of years ago maybe I don't know
so more of a comedic actor but
yeah
doesn't mean she couldn't have serious jobs
walks around with her ukulele not really like
the Mel vibe
but I think that she could do it
love it I think we covered all of our like dream castings of the show. If they get everybody we want, I think it's going to be just an all-star cast. So
I can't even imagine.
I'll hear back from Neil Druckmann any day now. You know, with my, I'm the casting director out of the show. I don't know if I mentioned that at the top of this.
That's a big chunk of the budget, though. Right there is just Charlie's Throne,
right? Or like Chris Evans or
any of these
people that I suggested are huge names. But yeah, I would like to see, I don't know, I think any of these folks would be great, and I think there's other people out there definitely that could be really good.
For sure.
I'm excited to see who they get as we get more news.
Yes, indeed.
I think we covered everything I wanted to talk about.
So
Are
too.
There any other things? I guess final question to close out Last of Us discussion. Do you think this will be a good show overall, yes or no?
Yes.
I agree. I think so. I am optimistic, too, with Neil Druckmann's involvement and the care and time that they're taking to do the casting. And I think HBO has a solid track record in terms of producing, especially, like, limited-run shows, I think. So,
for sure.
Excited to see more in the future. Shall we move on to questions with Claire?
Let's do it.
Hit it.
So, this week's question with Claire is... in the vibe of getting ready for Valentine's Day, which is in
is
just
the
a couple 12th days.
As this episode posts.
Right, so 2 days from now.
We're in Valentine's Day weekend mode.
Oh, and happy Lunar New Year, all of our listeners.
Indeed.
Valentine's Day. So, for Valentine's Day, this is kind of a twofold question. What is the best co-op game to play with your special someone? And what is the best romantic comedy to watch with your special someone or by yourself
or with a friend with the family member you're hanging out
special someone doesn't have to be
anyone
your romantic partner
you're spending time
yes.
with
whoever
over
it
this
is,
weekend
whoever it is you're spending Valentine's Day with
whether it's online
that's why I didn't
or in
say,
person or
yeah.
you know
I didn't say romantic partner I just said your special someone that could be anybody
I like it very good do you have answers in mind or do you want me to go first
why don't you go first I'm asking you the question
okay
so you answer the question
sure so for best co-op game, I'll give two. I'll give one that's, like, more intense and one that's more laid back.
Okay.
My go-to co-op recommendations are the Overcooked series for its zaniness, for its fun. It's hilarious to watch. It's hilarious to play. And it's a true test of any relationship.
Very true.
So there's that. And then my second one would be... if you haven't played it, Haze Light's A Way Out. We haven't talked about it really on this podcast as much because we played it
quite a while ago.
2 years ago when it came out. But really cool co-op experience. Very cinematic, very narrative-based, kind of a crime thriller game. And also a lot of elements of like action movies. You play two criminals who have to break out of prison and they were wrongfully accused and you go on this adventure and... it's really cool because it was designed from the ground up as a split-screen experience. So you can play it either couch co-op or online. You only have to buy one copy of the game It's available on Game Pass via the EA Access deal. And it's just really fun. It's like 5 or 6 hours, so it's a perfect little weekend game. But
yeah,
it's just an interesting experience, and we don't really see many like narrative cinematic games like this that you can play couch co-op.
Right.
So yeah, so those are my two.
Nice. Very nice. I was also going to say Overcooked. And I'll also throw out Sackboy's Big Adventure, because I am just really excited.
Yeah, that's been a fun one. We played a lot of that over Christmas, but didn't finish it, and I'd be excited to get back to it. Maybe
especially the music levels. I think we've only played one of them far, but
I also want to give a shout out to a new release that just came out today as of this podcast recording, but Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury that's coming out on the Switch. I know we're going to be playing it this weekend, but from all accounts, we never played the Wii U original, but it looks like such a fun game, and I love the co-op Mario games on the Wii, like the 2D games, so having a fully 3D co-op game I think will be a ton of fun. So
I'm so excited to play this together.
So by all accounts, I've heard it's great, so if you're a Mario fan, jump into this one with us.
Definitely. And then
now rom-coms,
yeah. The best
rom-com. I have an easy answer. My favorite rom-com is The Big Sick with Kumail Nanjiani.
That's a very good one, yeah.
It's hilarious. It's based on a true story of him meeting his wife and how they fell in love. And I think it's impeccably written, and it's so funny. And it has Ray Romano and Holly Hunter, and they just crush it. I'm blanking on the actress that plays his wife. Maybe you give your suggestion while I look that up real quick.
I love The Big Sick. That's a great suggestion. I have a hard time picking favorites, everybody.
Be a favorite. Just like, what's a recommendation you'd throw out?
Something
this
that
weekend?
Comes to mind is Dan in Real Life.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Which I slept on for the longest time. And then I saw it for the first time with you and your family, like a year ago? I loved that movie. I want to get married at that house.
Zoe Kavan is the name of the actress that played Kumail Nanjiani's wife, Emily, in the movie. And ironically enough, she's also in Dan in Real Life. She plays the middle daughter.
Yeah,
so that's funny. We have a little theme going with our recommendations. Yeah, those are good. And a new one that we haven't watched yet, but looks interesting, Malcolm and Marie, which is Zendaya and John David Washington, who was in Black Klansman. It's like black and white, and it's like a very intimate, like almost play style movie, and the tagline in the trailer got me, where it said, "This isn't a love story, it's a story about love." And I was like, "Oh, interesting, but it looks kind of intense, so I'm not sure if it's like, I wouldn't call it a comedy, but it does look like, a if you're looking for like a intimate film to watch over Valentine's Day, this might be a good one.
We also in the specific genre of teen rom-coms, we really like To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Yes. I'm such a fan. I even read the book.
Wow.
Or, well, the third book, because I wanted to know what happened before this movie. And I will tell you, I've seen the trailer for the third one, and so far it is inaccurate to the book. But...
Well, I've heard that they're all inaccurate to the book.
So. Well, no, I was just making it. This is just the first of the books that I read after seeing the two movies, so now I'm like,
I'm the expert.
I'm not going to be a stickler about it, because they're just fun, you know, teen rom-com movies. But I'm excited to watch the movie. It looks really cute.
Yeah. You're not going to be like me when we did our Harry Potter rewatch.
No,
and I was pausing every 5 seconds. That would actually happen.
As I bring my glasses up to my nose.
You push them up a little bit.
Push them up.
Indeed.
All right. Well, good stuff.
Nice picks.
Enjoy your weekends, listeners.
Yes.
Anything else to add on the question?
Go eat some chocolate, everybody.
Go eat some chocolate, everybody. With that, Claire, thank you so much for joining.
Super
as
fun.
Always, listeners, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping items. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. We are officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. Follow Lukewarm Games on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. If you enjoy our podcast, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts, a weekly blog written by yours truly, and more. Next week, Claire and I will be discussing our time playing Super Mario 3D World, as well as Cyber Shadow and Nuts. I know we've been promising conversation about those two games, but they're both really cool, so we'll talk about them next week for sure.
Yes.
With that, have a fantastic week. Cheers and happy gaming.